What does a transsexual, a woman that's become a man, have to say about the process, the life, and the related issues? Stay tuned as we find out on this edition of Frank Relationships.
You're listening to Frank Relationships with Frank Love.
Frank Love.
Frank Love.
Frank Love.
Frank Love.
Yes, as always, those are my babies. Thanks for getting daddy started today. Mwah. Merrick Moses was a woman and is now a man. And I'm curious, has your sex change been satisfying, or did you just think it was going to be better on the male side?
I am walking in my authentic self. So this is every day when I look into the mirror, I look at a dream come true.
That's powerful. Mm-hmm. I was wondering, as I think about it, a sex change, I think about whether it's the grass is greener on the other side. And I mean, not just for you, but for anyone who is participating in such a transformation. Do you think it ever is?
It depends on the person. Mm-hmm. For me, it's not so much about the grass being greener. It's about finally walking in a space where I feel wholly myself. So if self-satisfaction is a measure of the grass being greener, then yes. But I also know, as walking in a black man in America, it ain't never green like that. You know what I'm saying? It's never green.
What would you say your greatest challenge related to your change is or has been?
I think my challenges look like around family, around friends who have known me for years, and not just them accepting, but them, you know, using the appropriate pronouns, not making assumptions, getting to know who Merrick is as opposed to who I was before.
Wow. Okay. I that raises so many questions, and I guess that's why we're here. Welcome to Frank Relationships, a show for you, my brethren, who, like me, are too young to be considered old and too old to be considered young. It's also for those of you who love and support us. We're here to provide weekly wisdom, conversation, and the information that'll help create loving and flexible parents and partners. I'm Frank Love, and you can find me, my blog, and my various social media incarnations at franklove.com. If you're listening to the show on Blog Talk Radio, please follow us, and if via iTunes, please subscribe so that you can effortlessly get the show each week. Also, if you're enjoying the show, and of course you are, please give us a favorable iTunes rating, and please share it with your family and friends on your favorite social media platform. We're always looking for new social media friends, so please help us help our communities by spreading the word about the show. Greetings to my co-host, Nancy Goldring, the consummate generalist.
Good morning, Frank.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm great.
That yellow thing you,
like you
got, the scarf type, is that a scarf?
Yeah.
That looks nice on you.
Thank you.
Goes with your complexion very nice, all
that
good stuff.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Today's guest is an ordained old Catholic priest, a writer, community activist, and teacher. He's also a native New Yorker and Morgan State University psychology grad. Morgan's in Baltimore, for those of you who are wondering. And suffice it to say, with New York and Baltimore under his belt, he knows the big city. He was ordained to the diaconate. Could you? How do you say that?
It's really early. I'm just drinking my first cup of coffee. Diaconate.
Diaconate. In 2004 and to the priesthood in 2008. But that's not it. He also used to be a woman. And after his transformation, he became one of the first black trans men ordained within the old Catholic movement in Baltimore. So, if you, like me, want to know about the surgery, what is gender identity, and how gender identity may be different than sexual orientation, or how it actually is different than sexual orientation, then stay tuned as your Frank Relationship team talks with the man with the transgender experience and the explanation, Mr. Merrick Moses. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
You bet. Before we get too deep into today's subject matter, I want to check in to see what's going on in the news. Merrick, please don't be bashful. We certainly want you to weigh in on whatever comes up also. Okay, Nancy, you got anything for me?
Only something I came across about not being selfish in relationship. Do you have something sexier?
No, we can go with that.
Oh, you want to go with
we
that?
May go with both if I got something.
Okay, so I came across an article about not being selfish, how not to be selfish in a relationship or how to overcome it, because the writer suggests that it's not something that you can just say, oh, I'm not going to be selfish and it's over. And supposedly not even in the course of a year is this something you transcend. It's an evolutionary process, I suppose. Mm-hmm. And so I found myself thinking, not being selfish in relationship, not putting yourself first, putting the needs of someone else before your own. And I just looked at that in terms of the last few days of my life and how I was not willing to put my own needs on the back burner. And everything worked out fine. Mm-hmm. And somehow, it wasn't that I was disregarding the needs of the other people in my life. It was more that I was trying to remain balanced. Mm-hmm. And so I looked at how I could get everything done that I needed to get done so that I did not feel resentful mm-hmm. when it was time for me to address the needs of other people. Now, the interesting thing was it did require me to involve, to get support for myself.
From yourself.
For myself.
For yourself.
So there were things that I needed to handle logistically where I actually was able to get a friend to take care of for mm-hmm. me. You mm-hmm. know, pick some things up here, take some things over there. And then I was able to keep my promise to be in a meeting that I thought would have been better if I canceled. I made that meeting and was able to use some of the information I gathered there in the event that I needed to MC on Saturday. And so everything worked out fabulously. And yet, if I had said, well, let me let this go, you know, you got to be there for other people, I would have been irritated. Mm-hmm. And I don't think things would have gone nearly as well. Mm-hmm. So the whole idea of putting the needs of someone else before mine, I was having to ask myself, is that a novel concept? mm-hmm. You know, and it really isn't a novel concept. Putting the needs of another before mine in a responsibly mm-hmm. and managing my own emotional landscape so such that I can put you first. And not necessarily disregard what I need to do. Mm-hmm. And so it talks about, the article talks about listening and being attentive to issue.
What's the article? Where did it come from?
The article is actually online. Let's see. And it appears to be a blog by a guy named Hey Guy Inyang. I never heard of him before, okay. But I found it on Flipboard, which is my favorite place to find relationship data, just so you know. Mm. And it's called Love and Science, mm-hmm. How to Overcome Selfishness in a Relationship.
Well, we've had conversations like this in the past, I think.
Okay.
Haven't we?
About you being selfish?
Selfish, yeah. Have I ever shared my view on selfishness with you?
I don't think so.
I think we're all selfish.
Oh.
And that's just what we are. Sometimes we can look out for ourselves by looking out for someone else. Mm-hmm. We can invest in someone else thinking that we're going to get it back at some point. Or that's the better way to conduct ourselves because that's how we view how we move in the world. You know, we believe that we should pick up trash when we walk around, and we believe that whatever it is, it may seem charitable to many, but we actually believe in our identity as it pertains to that, and so it isn't really charitable. It's for us because it's how we, if we didn't do it, we would have a problem with ourselves.
Got it. Yes.
And so I really question and call into question the concept of selfishness versus selflessness. Mm. Because we all have a place where we want to invest. It's like if I want to sit quietly for a given period of time in a room full of people, some people may say I'm selfish because I'm not being social.
Okay.
But the flip is if you are being social, you're investing in those people and you may get something out of it. You make a business deal, a relationship, who knows what can come out of it. But if I decide to be quiet, that's just my decision not to invest there. I'm investing in something else.
Mm.
And some people may see that as selfish, and the other, people who are being social and yumming up in the room as selfless because it's a social event, if it's a social event. Oh, there's all kinds of examples to give.
Right.
But it's just where you want to invest. You want to invest short term, long term in terms of solitude. You want to invest short term, long term in terms of being social. They would be measured very differently, but that's just my take on things.
I hear you.
Sometimes it works out. Sometimes people view you and what you want to invest in a good way. Some people, they view you and what you want to invest in a bad way. But no matter what you're doing, you're investing in something.
Yes.
With the intent of a return.
Indeed. Yeah. Jeff?
You're nuts.
Let's hear it.
From the outside looking in, some people think folks are selfish if they are doing things for their family and themselves, the inner circle.
Mm-hmm.
I don't view that as selfish. I view that as being responsible.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Now, there are selfish people.
Give me an example of a selfish act.
Well, it could be perceived that I'm selfish with my time because I work a lot, but I'm working to make my family more comfortable. So I don't think that's selfish. I think that's with the risk of, seeming like a martyr, I'm doing that for reasons I know I have to do. And it comes from generations of, work and all that stuff.
Sure.
It comes from generations of who you are, what's been given down to you.
Trying to make the next generation better,
okay.
Have it easier, paving the way through experience, blah, 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 and by setting example.
Okay.
I think the word selfish comes into play in relationships a lot because people aren't willing to compromise. Mm-hmm. And that's a whole different dynamic. That's one-on-one.
Yes.
That's between the husband, the wife, the partners that are, dealing with one another. You have to come to some sort of a neutral ground where I'm going to give, I'm going to take, I'm going to share. It's all about compromise in relationships.
Mm-hmm.
In the bigger social world, which is what Frank was talking about, I happen to agree. It's just a matter of perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And if you aren't selfish to a certain degree, perhaps you're not being responsible.
Right.
Either for yourself or for your family or friends.
Yeah.
Or work.
Okay. Merrick?
Yes.
What do you have to say about what I said, what Jeff said, what Nancy said?
It's your first cup of coffee. Maybe you're not listening.
I believe that it's a balance. So we have to balance selfishness with selflessness, because if I don't take care of myself, I can't take care of anything else. Conversely, if I am so self-absorbed, then I'm no good to the world. So we have to strike a cogent balance between caring for self and caring for others. You know, when I look at the gospel and we see instances where Jesus goes away to pray, I think that was him being a little bit selfish, but that's okay, because he had to get himself together. He had to meditate. He had to pray and talk to the Father in secret. So we have examples even in Scripture. We have examples of Moses going off and seeing a burning bush. He was with the sheep, but he went off. So there are times when we do have to be selfish, but then there are times where we do have to be selfless. It's just about balance.
To what Jeff was saying, in terms of relationships, people one-on-one in relationships, I believe that it's not so much compromise that is, and I'm playing with this. This is something I've been given a lot of thought to recently. It's not so much compromise as it is being in relationship, because being in relationship, it just means that there's a flow that's working. And when it stops working, that's when the relationship stops working. But if you have 10 marbles, one person wants 9, the other person's fine with having 1. It is what it is. It's not even, I suppose you can call it a compromise. However, I think it's much more general and less heavy. I think it's less heavy when we call it just being in relationship.
I think you're mixing metaphors there. If someone's expectations are they're going to get 1 marble and you give them 2, you're generous.
Mm-hmm.
If you give them 1, you're giving them what they expect. If you don't give them any, they might think you're selfish. But more to mm-hmm. your point about sharing is that if you're in a relationship, the compromise isn't so much about 1 or 10 marbles. It's about time and how you spend that time with the person, how much time you spend with the person. I'd be interested from Merrick's point of view on a congregational level, people who do charity work or some sort of philanthropic work. Do you see that as being, I don't want to say compromise for time, but these are unselfish people. And I think that, at least my perception is that,
yeah,
that anyone in the clergy promotes that type of behavior. True?
That is true, but we also have problems within the clergy around self-care. So there's an example that from my life, I knew a priest who had a profound addiction issue, and he did not want to take time for himself. He wanted to continue to continue in ministry, continue with his mass schedule. And I was like, you probably need to take some time off. So his lack of wanting to do something where he perceived as selfish kind of really hurt that ministry in the end. And I think that being generous also means that we also have to be generous with ourselves as well. And that's very hard, particularly if you are a person who has a penchant for giving and selflessly giving. I think that we really do have to think about what that balance looks like for us, right? Because even like someone, Frank mentioned in relationship, if you are in relationship with yourself, how do you develop a relationship with yourself such that you are taking time for yourself and then you are giving, right? 60-40 in a relationship can be balanced for that particular relationship. 70-30
yes.
can be that balance in that relationship, depending on the terms of the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that people really need to think about what works for them. You know, when we do cookie-cutter examples of, you know, try to live a Brady Bunch lifestyle or whatever people think that is, it doesn't necessarily work because it doesn't work for you. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
I do know what you're saying. Anything else, Jeff?
No. It all makes sense. Mm-hmm. But again, the basic premise behind being selfish is a matter of perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And you hear it a lot with couples.
Mm-hmm.
And it's mostly about time.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to
and
come.
And money.
Yeah, well, yeah, but you have to come to some sort of agreement and understanding and realistic expectations.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. There's a part of me that really wants to jump in the interview, but I got something else. I got something else I want to really chat about for.
Rock and roll.
Birth of a Nation.
You said you saw that.
I did see it.
Yeah.
And did we already talk about this?
Well, you mentioned last week that you saw it. I saw a preview for it, but I haven't seen it yet.
But did we talk about anything related to Nate Parker?
Not that I recall, no.
You know, I really have a fundamental, you know, first of all, years ago, it seems like almost in another lifetime, Nate Parker, when he was at Penn State, was it? I think it was Penn State, was accused of raping a woman.
Oh,
you didn't know that?
I did not.
Seriously?
I'm serious. Nope.
That could be good.
Okay.
And there's been quite a bit of uproar over that, and some people are even boycotting the movie.
Oh, wow.
And now he was found not guilty. There was another guy that was found guilty, but apparently he spent some time in jail, but apparently that was overturned. The woman who accused them of raping her she ended up committing suicide later. And I hear the fervor around around Nate Parker being a rapist or not.
Okay.
And I can't help but say, like, who knows what happened? I have no idea.
So someone else was actually convicted of this?
Yeah, so apparently Nate Parker and another guy participated in a threesome with a woman. And I think she was inebriated or said she was inebriated, too inebriated to consent to the sex. And that's where the rape allegation came from.
Yeah, it was Penn State. It was just an allegation. Okay. He was a star wrestler. He's from Norfolk. Mm-hmm. He was a star wrestler and had a transfer. Again, and this until proven guilty, but
sure.
He went to Oklahoma and was like the number two in his weight class in the country.
Mm-hmm.
That was his thing.
Mm-hmm.
But the stigma of the allegation had him split the original college.
It's such a heavy issue, but in the midst of that heaviness, if you don't know, you, me, any of us sitting here, I'm remiss to have a genuine opinion about whether he did it or didn't do it, because I don't know. And as far as I'm concerned, if I don't know, that's not even, I'm not touching it. Like, I don't have nothing. I'm leaving that completely alone.
Sure.
And I feel like that's the responsible thing for all of us to do. But some people are
Well, you know what's confirming it for some people is the suicide. You know, they're saying, you know, and the suicide maybe stemmed from who knows what also. However, there are definitely in the minds of some people, I wouldn't doubt, let me at least say, that they're saying, oh, something unconscionable occurred that the woman would take her life. So, and...
Okay. You got
to. I mean, that doesn't confirm or deny.
Yeah. It's
anything.
Just the
it
way
just
some
makes
people
it
spin
even
it.
More severe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just makes the whole situation in your mind gets amplified by the fact
somebody
that she
died.
Took her life. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The only thing I'll mention about this is only because I saw it recently. The false allegations that were reported in Rolling Stone magazine.
Mm-hmm.
Of a group rape at the University of Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
And the young lady who told the story made the whole thing up.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And Rolling Stone had to apologize. It affected a lot of people, the people who were accused, the administration, who are now suing Rolling Stone magazine.
Mm-hmm.
All of them have said the real loser in this is public perception of the fact that campus rape does occur.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, and this is going to be a boy who cried wolf type situation because unfortunately it's like, look, she just made it up and look what happened. Meanwhile, there are others who are not making it up. It's a serious epidemic.
Yeah.
And that tarnishes the credibility of anyone who comes out again. Oh, they could be making it up. Mm-hmm. So again, I'm taking that, you know, we made a little left turn there, but it is tragic that the young lady committed suicide. We don't know why. That could have been problem. Again, it's up to, that could have been one of her problems that include lying about being assaulted, you know, a high profile athlete, you know, maybe she put herself in the, like Frank said, when he started this, you never know.
Right.
We weren't there.
Right.
And Nate Parker now, who has a storied career, you know, we've seen him in a lot of movies. That's going to be that stigma, that little asterisk.
Yeah.
Oh, and he was alleged.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
I think that part of the issue is how this rolled out. It was completely mishandled by his publicity team. They did a terrible job. And so I think that he was left in a position to constantly defend himself. And in that constant defense, oftentimes he came off as not sympathetic, not saying that he was guilty or not, but just the fact that this incident happened and unfortunately, really, he exercised really poor judgment just off the break being in that situation. That being said, the way that the publicity team around him handled it, I don't know who is his publicist, but he needs to fire them because it was a terrible job. Terrible.
How would you have suggested that they handle it differently?
Well, I think that one of the things that they should have done was get out in front of this. People. I mean, I'm sure his team knew that this thing was out there, so get out in front of it, right? Also, too, give that one big interview to a major news outlet in which he says, I didn't do it. It was a terrible time. I was a young man and made really poor decisions. And ultimately, as a human being, I feel for her pain or whatever perception she had. But I know that I did not rape this woman. But in the end, it's tragic when anyone kills themselves. And lastly, people need to understand campus rape is real. And he could have gone off into that. Mm-hmm. And then he could have held a fundraiser for an organization that fights campus rape. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's a lot of ways to paint a picture, but the picture that they allowed him to paint and they didn't interfere, when I say they, his publicity team, it was terrible. Mm-hmm. I blame them.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Great response. Thank you. Substantive. Yeah. Okay. Brother Merrick, let's get to the good stuff. The other good stuff. What is gender identity?
Gender identity is one's internal sense of whether they feel male, female, or in between. There is a multiplicity of genders. It's just not male and female. So it's how you feel about who you are inside in terms of what you perceive your gender to be.
So educate us, Merrick. What are the gender identities? Because for most people, it's just male and female.
So under the label of transgender, there are a multiplicity of genders. So you do have trans man, you do have trans woman, you do have demi boys and demi girls, you do have people would consider cross-dressing under the transgender umbrella, although some people would dispute that. People would, in terms of the term transgender, I will say this, that all transsexuals are transgender, but not all transgender people are transsexual. Transsexual has to do with someone who has taken a medical intervention to transition from one gender to another. You also have people who consider themselves genderqueer. They don't consider themselves neither male nor female. And they will use different pronouns. Some people use the pronouns they. Some people use the pronouns their. It all depends on who they perceive themselves to be. And so when we talk about gender identity, this is not a newfangled creation. It is actually people around the world have different different gender identities, and this is from millennia. So when we look at the indigenous people of this hemisphere, oftentimes the native cultures recognized more than one gender.
How important are those pronouns to you? Because you mentioned that when I asked the early question. And your family?
I think... Mm-hmm.
Yeah, how...
Well, they're really important because when you use the correct pronouns, you're saying you see me as I am. You see me as I see myself.
Mm-hmm.
Oftentimes when people misgender, sometimes it's by accident, sometimes it's not.
Mm-hmm.
Oftentimes, in my walking experience, people have misgendered me on purpose to belittle me,
mm-hmm.
right? So that's a thing. People have misgendered me because they didn't know.
And what
I was at homecoming this weekend, and there was someone who I hadn't seen in 20 years, and she just couldn't get it together. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So for me, she got a pass because we haven't seen each other. So that's a whole other level of education that I have to give this individual on who I am now.
Mm-hmm. And it's okay. So you see someone, mind you, I went to Morgan also, and it sounds like we may have been there at the same time. I was there in 89. Is that?
I went from 92 to 96.
Okay. All right. How do you allow someone to get adjusted? You walk up to someone, you say, hey, who has not seen you since your change. How does that dynamic work? Please, and describe that scenario, if you will.
Well, when I walked, the person was talking to some friends. We have a lot of mutual friends. And so, I had to really approach it gingerly. And so we laughed, and, you know, she said she missed me and things of that nature. But then she really, like, started tripping, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally, after about an hour of her, like, she wasn't really going off. It was just really kind of like, wow. I had to be like, hey, I'm a man now. I am transgender. I'm a transsexual. So, and then that was a moment we were sitting in a car, and that was like a reality TV moment. We like really had a laugh about it because I really made it funny because I wanted to make it light. I didn't want to make it heavy, but this was just like one encounter in 20 years. So I tried. So I was very gentle with her.
Mm-hmm.
But oftentimes there are trans folks who aren't so gentle because they're fed up and they're tired. You know what I'm saying? I can only speak for myself.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really treated it as a very gentle thing, in a teacher mode kind of thing, because I wanted to make that human connection with her.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted her to see me as I am,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to the girl that she knew at Morgan.
And that it's... Years ago, I have a friend, even he's still a friend. He's a gay male, and he did something. I don't even remember. I think he like kissed me on the cheek or something like that. I given him a hug, just greeting him. And I was like, whoa, you know, it really threw me off. And I mentioned it to another friend, and he was saying, the friend that I mentioned it to, and just kind of like it was a weird experience. He said, "You both get an opportunity to see how things are, I guess, different. Be how each of you deals with the differences, because now he's used to dealing the friend that's gay." Is used to dealing
mm-hmm.
with men who that's not a big issue. And
mm-hmm.
I'm not. So in terms of interacting mm-hmm. with each other, you gotta at some level understand that they're just some differences and talk about them. And
oh, absolutely. I don't think he should have kissed you on the cheek, though. That was inappropriate, only because that's your space. So
yeah.
I don't know what was in his mind for him to do that, but that's like your space. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Shake my hand or greet each other as you would have greeted, you know, because it's not like he's trans. This is a sexual orientation issue. So when you're, you know, in somebody's bodily space and that wasn't an invitation that you gave, that's pretty much not a cool violation.
He crossed the boundary. Mm.
And
right.
Now, here's a comedic story. With the same friend, he and I getting a drink one night, talking, and I said, and there was a woman and her partner walked in. I mean, her male partner. They walked in. Mm-hmm. And I said, wow, she's attractive. And he said something that just blew my mind. Like, I couldn't see this coming. I just couldn't see it coming. He said, so is he. And I was like, oh, and he said, we could tag team him. You take her,
oh, no.
I take her.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, that's totally appropriate.
Oh, boy. So, one side, it could be offensive and you don't see it coming. Another side, it could be funny and you don't see it coming. So there's a level of respect that I try to have about the entire issue and the naivety that may come on both sides for the entire issue.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
How do you deal with your family now? And how, tell me about the whole family process, coming out to your family, when your family began to know. Was it because you said something, or was it because of just who you were? I mean, and based on that question itself, I could probably sit here and not say another word for the next half hour.
It was very interesting because the last time, like, I saw my family, they've moved to Atlanta now. So I went down there to see them in 2014. And at that time, I had just started my medical transition. So I told my aunt, and she didn't believe me. I told my cousin, and she just asked me why, and that was that. But in terms of me and my cousin, when I came out as gay in 98, she took me to my first lesbian party. So we were good on that, and she's bisexual. So she kind of got it, although she didn't understand it, but she kind of got it. Mm-hmm. Her mother, on the other hand, had a big problem, and she said, oh, I'll never see you as this, and she was going off, and I was like, yeah, okay. But she was like, I love you regardless. Mm-hmm. And I said, okay. Mm-hmm. And you know, my thing is, it's so funny because sometimes when you see family and they kind of forget how old you are. So I'm looking at my aunt like, you know, regardless of whether you believe in it or not, whatever there is to believe for you, I am a 40-year-old man. So you don't call no shots on this body at all. But in respecting where she is, and so over the months, we actually had conversation, and I tried to get her to understand it in a very gentle way. What turned her heart, though, this was very interesting. She told me that she watched Caitlyn Jenner's reality TV show, and that, like, her heart changed. And I was like, okay. You know what I'm saying? However God wants to work in your life, that's great. Mm-hmm. And so we do have a really good relationship now. In terms of the rest of my family, people said, well, we love you regardless. There are some people who don't talk to me. I haven't spoken to them in almost 30 years, so I don't even really care about that. Mm-hmm. And so at the end of the day, what I realized is that you have to give, well, in terms of my life, I had to give my family time, but also creating healthy boundaries for myself and standing in who I am, standing up as a man. Like, because there's only going to, I had to draw some red lines in the sand at some point. But in the end, when my aunt said her heart changed, that was amazing to me. That was amazing to me because my mother's side is very black and southern in some respects. My grandparents are from Virginia and West Virginia, respectively. But my father's side is Panamanian. Mm-hmm. And so when I told my Panamanian cousin, he called me. He was like, I've seen some changes that you have. And we talked about it. And he was so loving and gracious.
Mm-hmm.
And so
nice.
I thought that was interesting because I expected my Afro-Latino Caribbean family to be a little bit more harsh.
Me
but
too.
My Black American family was much more harsh than my Caribbean people. So I think that was very interesting.
That touches on the selfish, selfless conversation we had earlier. I mean, if you think about it, some family members could say you're being selfish by having an issue with us having an issue. I mean, you just,
right.
You spring this on us and you just want us to live with it. That's being selfish. And so but yet you could say exactly what you did say. I'm setting some boundaries where I've got to help myself make a world for myself that right. makes sense. And so if you want to see that as selfish in a bad way, sure. If you want to see it selfish in a good way, great.
right.
Yeah.
In 98, how old were you?
I was 24.
Okay, so you were 24 when you came out. And mm-hmm. you have been a lesbian woman, well, a lesbian, mm-hmm. presenting in the masculine, correct? So,
yeah.
So then I feel like if someone in my family who I know is openly gay and presenting as a man comes to me and says, well...
Someone in your family that's woman?
A woman or a man. If they're gay and they're presenting on the opposite side. So she's okay. presenting as... Now, if she's a lesbian woman presenting as a woman, and then she says, I'm going to change my sex to a man, mm-hmm. then I would kind of be confused. And yet, mm-hmm. she's a lesbian, she's presenting in the masculine, and now she says she wants to go ahead and do a medical transformation. Then in my mm-hmm. mind, I'm thinking, well, of course.
Hmm. Right, Right. And so
it's funny because I didn't
pattern.
Yeah, that's just to me, that's just a natural evolution of a process. Now, it does happen that it or should I say it is possible that you could be I don't even know. Now I'm kind of
a femme presenting lesbian who decides to transition and become trans male. That does happen too.
My
and
brain
I put
is
this
spinning.
Out there. Sometimes people dress in a certain way for protection, right? And so we see a lot of this in rural towns. We see a lot of this in further down the Mason-Dixon line. Uh-huh. People will dress in a certain way and have a sexual orientation because they are trying to protect themselves. I knew a masculine presenting woman in lesbian world, she would probably be considered a stone butch, who told me that she does not wear men's shoes. And I'm looking at her like, well, you clearly are presenting masculine. And she said because she doesn't wear male shoes because if she did, she would be disowned by her family. And this person is over 50 and a veteran of the Army. So I'm looking at her like, I don't even know why you care what they think, but everybody has to go through their family process. She's from the Eastern Shore of Maryland. So if you've ever been to the Eastern Shore of Maryland, it's darn near Alabama. Like, it really is. So her doing that was a way for her to protect herself and still be in communion with her family. Like, that issue of shoes was a very big thing for them. Mm-hmm. I don't know why. I don't come from that space, so I don't know.
Right.
But she had to do that to keep her communion with her family. And she was also one of the breadwinners in her family as well.
Wow.
So even her money, even her supply of her family was not good enough for even her to walk in her full authentic self. And a lot of LGBTQ people go through that daily.
Okay. So let me ask you something. So, man, seems like a long, long time ago. I saw this movie called Stonewall, okay? So one of the characters in the movie is a man presenting as a woman. He cross-dresses, okay?
Yeah.
So 100% dresses up, I mean like RuPaul dress up, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, as the story progresses, you find out that this man is in a romantic relationship with the man who is a man, married, the whole nine yards, She's in a relationship with the man who owns the bar.
Mm-hmm.
So in a, you know, the story goes on and you see them together in a bedroom and the man is ready to leave his wife for his lover. And he says, I want you to have the operation. And she's like, no way. And I'm saying, but you dress up, I mean, to the nines, like a woman, makeup, everything. And he's just saying, go all, you know, let's take this thing all the way. And then I can be with you openly and outwardly. And she went, she just felt like he was asking her to do something unthinkable. So, and he loved her. So the story goes on, they go to bed, and sometime in the night, he commits suicide. And I mean, you want to talk about tailspin. I was just like, oh my gosh. So, you know, but it confused me too. It
was
confused.
That like the first 5 minutes of the movie?
Oh no,
or that's the movie.
This is as things go on. So it confused me that she was so upset when he asked her to have the operation. And I thought that, like I'm thinking with you, that it would be the next, you know, it would be the next thing to do. But he was not willing to go that far.
Every person, every trans person, transition looks different. So for some transgender people, they have no medical interventions. They're not taking hormones. They're not exploring the various gender-affirming surgical procedures and options that are available. They don't feel that they need to do that to be authentically who they are. And so I think that one of the narratives that, a false narrative is that in order to be trans, you have to have surgery or you have to take hormones. And that's not necessarily the case. The reason why people do embark on medical intervention is to feel more like themselves. And I didn't see the movie, but from what I'm hearing from you, it sounds like this person already felt like themselves. So they didn't feel the need to undergo medical intervention to affirm who they knew they already are and walk in their authenticity. Felt that they were complete as they are.
Okay.
In terms of who I am, I felt like I needed to do that because from the time I hit like pre-puberty, that like middle school age, from like 10 to 12, 13, I had been at war with my body. I was very clear about that. And so when I embarked on walking in my authentic self and I did decide to medically transition, that I decided to declare peace with my body. And so where I'm at now, the war is over. And I feel so much more clarity and just really feel good in my spirit because the war is over. But that's my story. That's not everybody's story.
Sure.
What conversation did you have with yourself or anyone related to you? My understanding of what you said was that you were a lesbian and then you decided you were going to become a man. And how did that okay, did I get something wrong?
No, I was just going to say that it wasn't that I decided to become a man. I decided to walk in who I already was and had kept hidden.
Okay.
Like so a lot of people don't understand this levels of coming out and being out. And for me as a trans person, I had engaged in many years of self-hatred. Merrick was always here, but I really didn't like Merrick too much. You understand what I'm saying? And so I got tired of being sick and tired. You know what I'm saying? And I had reached the age of 40, and I was like, I can't go through the rest of my life not being who I am.
So now do you still like women?
I like women and men. My sexual orientation is bisexuality.
Gotcha.
But when you were lesbian, lesbian.
Yes. And so what happened was when I embarked on my medical intervention, I experienced something that people called orientation expansion. And so even in high school, I had dated boys in high school because that's what I thought I was supposed to do, right? Growing up in a Roman Catholic household with a Baptist mother, you weren't going to do anything else at that time.
Right.
So
growing up in
decided,
a Roman Catholic house, you said growing up in a Roman Catholic household with a Baptist mother. So dad was Roman Catholic?
Yes, my father was from Panama, and he was not only Roman Catholic, but if you know any Latinos who practice Roman Catholicism, that is a special brand of Catholicism. And so that's how I was raised.
Gotcha. And mom was a Baptist.
But my mother never, she never converted. She, to get married at the altar, she promised to raise any children from their union as Roman Catholic. So that's how I was baptized and confirmed and got First Communion as Roman Catholic.
Okay. All right. I interrupted what you were saying just because I was, you know, that was a clarifying question. But please continue where you were going with that.
Where was I at? What was I saying?
So I said you were talking about growing up and how you did date men or boys when you were young because your Baptist mother wouldn't have had it any other way.
And so when I came out at 24, that was after a spiritual process. My mother had died, and I just felt at that point that I needed to live in that space because that's where I thought I was. But this man, this boy within me was always there. And so it took me many years and therapy, right? So I decided in 2011, I started going to a counselor who dealt with gender issues. And he sat me down and he told me, I think you're trans. And I pretty much cussed him out, right? But he was so patient. And for 3 years, I was with him. And then I decided to see a therapist who specializes in gender dysphoria. And that is, gender dysphoria is a great feeling of discomfort when your insides and your outsides don't match, when they are incongruent to the person that's living in the body. And so one of the reasons why I went to the gender therapist is because I made a commitment to myself in 2014 that I would finally walk the way of congruence. And so when I did that, I decided in May of that year that I would try hormonal therapy for 90 days to see how I felt. And then after that 90 days, I was like, this is who I am. Like, I had felt so in alignment with myself. It reminded me of back when I was 10, when I was pre-puberty, and I didn't have any war with my body issues. And so I decided that I would continue my journey, and it's just been so profound.
Wow.
So profound.
You know, now you have, apparently, you have therapists that can say you sound like you're trans. And I consider that, though I do not know definitively, I consider that something that could fall into the new category. What do you think, if you have an opinion one way or the other, what do you think happened 50 years ago, 100 years ago, with individuals who may have been going through what you went through when there were no therapists that could, or no formal therapists that could tell you what you were told?
Well, we do have instances of people who pretty much cross-dressed or dressed as the other gender for the bulk of their life. Like, you have a brother named Billy Tipton, who was a jazz musician, and he was assigned female at birth. And so he lived his life as a man and then disappeared at some point. And someone told me that he disappeared because he was scared that people found out who he was. Mm-hmm. So, and then you have people like, who was it, Bessie Smith, who dressed as a man and said that she was a lesbian. Then she had a fundamentalist Christian, I think, conversion experience at some point and decided that she no longer wanted to walk in her truth at that time. And there have been instances. I know that there was a Native American ambassador during the time of the treaties, when the Native Americans were forced to basically negotiate with the United States government, and this person was considered two-spirit, so having the spirit of male and female, and he walked in, as we would term today, in a trans-femme light, in a trans-femme view. So there have been instances throughout time, throughout the world, where people walked in a gender that wasn't necessarily congruent with their genitalia or how people thought they were supposed to act because they had certain body parts. And so people just lived. They didn't undergo medical interventions because there were none at the time, but they often cross-dressed, if you will, for lack of a better word.
And the bathroom, the current bathroom conversation that's being had, particularly in North Carolina. Are you familiar with it?
Yes.
Well, can you outline what the issue is, and then I have a few questions.
The issue is there's a bill called House Bill 2 that in its provisions said that people couldn't use the bathroom according to their gender identity. They had to go according to birth sex. Right. Mm-hmm. And so what's problematic is with that is if you have people who are passable, meaning that they are presenting in their complete identity. So if you have a trans woman who looks like a woman, who is a woman, right, going into male facilities because she has what has been termed a male member, that's problematic. You're setting people up for rape. Right. Mm-hmm. Conversely, if you have a trans man going into a woman's bathroom, that's going to make women feel unsafe. And that's not in accord with who he is as a human being. So this false trope of, oh, the women, men are going to be in women's bathrooms and they're going to be attacking women. The truth of the matter is we've had more instances of people in Congress going into the bathroom and trying to victimize other men as opposed to trans women victimizing women. So we need to really understand what that is. I mean, if you look at Mr. Trump and his whole sexual assault narration, I would be more scared of my daughter being in contact with somebody like that, or even my son being in contact with somebody like that, than opposed to a trans woman just trying to pee in a woman's bathroom. You know what I'm saying? And so I think that this was used to really gin up votes, keep certain conservatives in power, but it really backfired. But the other part of the bill was really stripping away a lot of workers' rights. So we don't necessarily talk about that part of the bill, but that's also a very important part of that bill that people haven't really talked about.
Okay.
Wow.
So do you think that it should just be whatever you have, whatever your genitalia is currently, is what is the bathroom that you should use?
No, because I don't identify as a woman. I'm not a woman, so I wouldn't want to be in the woman's bathroom.
So the ideal situation is a gender neutral bathroom. You know how you go in places and it's what mm-hmm. they call unisex, mm-hmm. like at home.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So,
right.
But so
because
many
the toilet is a toilet,
right? But so many,
except
so
a
many,
urinal.
Yes. Well, but so many establishments are set up,
yeah.
to separate the sexes, and I guess it will turn into, you know, a matter of having to, you know, and a unisex bathroom typically only has one, only will accommodate
right.
one person at a time. So then you look at, you know, things getting backed up because we don't have it separated. I mean, women slip into the men's bathroom all the time, but they do
all
it when nobody's in there.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Right.
So I don't know. I guess it's a dicey issue. But
I think that gender-neutral bathrooms, if I have an establishment and I have two bathrooms, I can make them both gender-neutral, and people and they would be single stall. People could come and go as they please. I personally prefer gender-neutral bathrooms anyway, but I think that in terms of the multi-stall bathrooms, that's the issue, and I think that people should be using the bathroom in accord with their gender identity. And I think this issue around predatory behavior, because that's what the trope was, predatory behavior, we need to really look at that and what that looks like, because sexual assault does happen in bathrooms, but it often involves cisgender people. And a cisgender person is a person who it was assigned one gender at birth and continues to identify with that gender throughout their lifetime.
That's us? Well, Merrick. I just thought I was a woman. Okay. So listen. I have to know this before we go. What is it like to be a black man in America?
That's very interesting. That could be a whole nother show. But I will say this, that growing up among a lot of men and, you know, cousin, male cousins, so you hear about what it's like to be a black man, right?
Yes.
Experiencing when I was a masculine presenting lesbian, often getting mistaken for a man and having to deal with that. And also police abuses too. A lot of times we don't talk about how masculine of center women are harassed by the police and even beat up by the police too. We don't talk about that. But now, as being who I am, walking in black masculinity, it is a joy. But it's also very frightening because I wasn't socialized as a black man. So the talks that I heard on how to talk, how to interact with the police, I heard vicariously through the men that I grew up around, as opposed to someone saying to me, this is what you need to do to not die. Mm-hmm. And so as I walk in this world, I replay those conversations in my head. I pull up the voices of my ancestors, my male ancestors, who have had those conversations when I was present in the room with other men. So I pull those conversations up to keep me safe. But there's also an aspect of privilege that I now have in my own community that I didn't have before when I walked in black femininity. And I think that that's very interesting, too, in that, you know, being served first, or people asking me, am I okay, and having, you know, certain spaces where black women, particularly older black women, look out for me, when that wasn't the case when I presented as female. And so I thought that that was interesting, and it gave me an insight into the behaviors that I saw from black men when I was a child, because I couldn't understand some things, like why he was doing this and why he got away with such and such. And now, as a black man walking through the world, I'm like, now I understand. But I also feel that it helps me help people bridge gender gaps. Because I do know now, as I walk in myself, as I walk in my black masculinity, I have a view of male and female relationships that are very uncommon, even not just in my community, in the world. This is a very rare human experience. Yeah. And I think that transgender people, if folks have the mind to do it, can act as a healing agent between men and women.
How come you ain't never asked me that, Nancy? What's it like?
Because you only have one perspective, Frank, in this particular situation. Merrick's opinion trumps yours. She has been both. he has been both. And so we have the benefit of an extremely unique perspective.
All right.
So I appreciate you having the eyes to see both sides, Merrick.
You listen,
and I will say it's because I choose to.
Yeah,
because there are other trans guys and other trans women who don't necessarily have that perspective.
Got it.
You know.
Got it.
You're listening to Frank Relationships, and we've been talking with priest and transsexual Merrick Moses. Merrick, anything you want us to know? Anything you want to throw out there? What you're up to? Where we can find you?
I'm on Twitter at Merrick Moses. I'm on Facebook at Merrick Moses. I'm on Instagram at Merrick Moses. And the last thing I would say is that before people make assumptions, just get to know a person. If you're not sure what a person's pronoun is, then ask, what is your preferred gender pronoun? And I would just ask that people be open-hearted, because you never know who you meet. You'll never know what that smile could do to someone, or a kind word could save somebody's life. So let's be gentle with each other.
That's nice. That's real.
Thank you so much.
Along today's journey, we've discussed transgender issues, the North Carolina bathroom issue and the suggested resolutions, and how to navigate and deal with LGBT conversations and the issues, the issues related to those conversations with families. Thank you to my co-host, Nancy. Thank you to Jeff Newman, my engineer, and thank you to my guest, Merrick Moses. You've been great. I hope you've had as much fun as I've had hanging out with today's ensemble. As always, it's my wish for you to walk away from this conversation with a heaping helping of useful information that'll help you create a relationship that's as loving and accepting as possible. Let us know what you thought of today's show at Facebook.com/RelationshipFLove. On Twitter at Mr., that's M-R, Frank Love, or at franklove.com. If you're listening via Blog Talk Radio, make sure you like us there. And if via iTunes, make sure you subscribe so that you can receive each week's show. This is Frank Love.